Attention Vet Blast podcast listeners. We have an all-new virtual CE event called Fetch Encore going live at 11 a.m. Eastern on December 14th. This will be a feline medicine symposium, and it's an extension of Fetch Long Beach, but everyone's invited. Join us to keep learning and earning credit from the best in veterinary medicine. One afternoon, six sessions in feline medicine for only $25. That's right, $25. Register now using the link in today's show notes. Enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Well, we have a very popular topic that many of you have reached out to us on here at the Vet Blast podcast, and we're going to demystify FIP, testing, treatment advances, and practical takeaways. And we have our wonderful colleague in the house, Dr. Kelly Chappelle, joining us. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and talk about FIP.
Yes, this is a very, you know, common, obviously, disease, and so much has changed with treatment. Yay, for the better, I would say.
Oh, my God.
Right? Oh, my gosh. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. So to our listeners out there, about our great colleague, Dr. Kelly Chappelle, she's an internal medicine specialist at Thrive Pet Specialist in North Scottsdale, Arizona. Originally from Long Island, New York, she earned her DVM degree from Midwestern University in 2019. Following her graduation, Dr. Chappelle completed a rotating internship at AMC in Manhattan before embarking on a three-year residency focused on small animal internal medicine at, drumroll everyone, wait for it, Iowa State University. Woohoo! Sorry, just have to do a little plug there for them. Last year, she achieved the distinction of becoming a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine. Dr. Chappelle has a special interest in feline internal medicine and infectious diseases, reflecting her commitment to advancing veterinary care. I love it. Okay, before we get into it, what made you get into more the feline side of internal medicine?
Oh, I'm a crazy cat lady at heart. Yes. Yeah, so I'm a crazy cat lady. So the more cats I see, the better. It makes my day better. So yeah, I just love all feline things, and it always just brings it close to home. I love my cats more than life itself. So not saying that I don't treat dogs with the same care, but it just breaks it. It brings it a lot more close to home. So yeah. I'm trying to educate and learn as much as I can on cats to bring that into my practice is always everything I can do.
I love it. Well, we need you out there. Thank you for all the great work you're doing. All right. So FIP, since we can, you know, very rarely obtain a definitive diagnosis of it in clinical practice, what testing and tools can we use for a more presumptive FIP diagnosis?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I will say the diagnosis of FIP is still the bane of my existence. As happy as I am that we can treat it, diagnosis is still super frustrating. As most people know, you know, definitive diagnosis is really going to be with that histopathology and immunohistochemistry, which requires us to get surgical samples, which require surgery and anesthesia, which most of the time we're not going to put these sick cats through. So a lot of the time we are relying on a more presumptive diagnosis. I often think about it as a building block system, as I'm often trying to check a certain number of boxes to make myself feel like I'm fitting into that presumptive diagnosis. One of the first building blocks that I'll look at is really the signalement and the vitals. FIP can really occur in any age cat, but we definitely see it in cats less than 2 years old most commonly. Pure breed cats and male cats are also slightly overrepresented in some studies. Fever is really common in cats with FIP, with about 70% of cats with FIP having a fever. In a 2017 study, actually, that looked at cats with fevers, FIP was the most common condition diagnosed in cats referred for fever. So whenever I see a young cat with a fever, it always like picks my little FIP flags up. One of the next building blocks I'll really commonly look at is a chemistry panel, really looking at the globulins, albumin-globulin ratio, and bilirubin. The globulin number itself could still be in normal range, but could still have an abnormal albumin globulin ratio. So if my chem panel doesn't automatically calculate my albumin globulin ratio, I'm always just calculating that. An albumin globulin ratio greater than 0.8 has a really high negative predictive value, meaning it's really helpful in ruling out FIP. So if I have a cat where maybe I have FIP on my differential list and it's greater than 0.8, I feel pretty good to bring it lower down on my differential list. An albumin globulin ratio less than 0.6, and especially less than 0.4, again, is another thing that peaks my flags up for FIP in those cats. Ideally, we could do some type of abdominal and chest imaging, whether that's just TFAS or X-rays, really looking for fluid in either cavity, because getting a sample of fluid is going to be a really important building block to our presumptive diagnosis. So if there is fluid, ideally we're submitting that for fluid analysis, cytology, and culture, which honestly, most of the time I'm really using to rule out other causes of effusion, such as lymphoma and septic abdomens, less so to diagnose FIP, but to rule out other things. You can do PCR on that fluid, which can be submitted through IDEXX, Antech, Cornell, and Auburn. And I use that as a pretty strong building block of my presumptive diagnosis. Kansas State also offers a new test called the viral antigen detection test, which you can use which fluid is a test you would submit for that. That's looking for macrophages, but that's looking for the virus in the macrophages of the effusion, which makes it specific for the mutated coronavirus, as normal coronavirus shouldn't be able to get into the macrophages. So that's a new test that's out there by Kansas State that's available.
Interesting.
And although we commonly separate FIP into these dry and wet forms, it's definitely not that clear cut in reality. About 88% of cases of FIP are going to have some level of abdominal effusion, even in the quote unquote dry forms. So it's really important to look, even if you could get just a few drops of fluid from a patient, that's going to go super far in building our presumptive diagnosis. The most frustrating cases to diagnose for me still are going to be the truly dry forms that have no fluid, because then I'm going to have to start doing these needle aspirates on different organs, looking for ways to really build my presumptive diagnosis. And we can do some PCR testing on those aspirates. One of the common questions I get when talking about FIP is, what use does serology and/or antibody testing play into our diagnosis? And ultimately, it has really little to no use in the diagnosis of FIP. Positive serology really just means that cat has been infected or exposed to coronavirus, but it's not specific, as we know, for the FIP mutation. So positive serology, again, is of really little value. The titer also really plays no role in the differentiation. I'll often get questions, well, was a really high titer, does that help me differentiate between the two? And honestly, it doesn't. I really take no value in that. And to add to that, a negative serology does not rule out FIP, as about 10% of cats with FIP do not seroconvert and have negative serology testing. So due to these things, the AAFP FIP guidelines actually do state that they do not recommend serology testing in our road to diagnosis. So I never run it. And even in referral cases that have run it, I really take little to no value in it, honestly. So looking at sigmoment, looking at if they have a fever, what their chemistry panel looks like, if you can get any fluid doing PCR testing on that, those are going to really be my biggest building blocks to a presumptive diagnosis.
Has the turnaround time gotten better with some of these labs, like with the PCR testing and the fluid analysis? I remember it was a couple of months ago. I had a 2-year-old cat that had a fever. Literally, what you just said. I was like, "Whack!" We walks, talks, quacks, just like it, you know. And but we wanted to get a little bit more information to make that confirmation. But time was of the essence. So, what does that look like now?
Yeah, the turnaround time has gotten better. Most times, again, I'm usually sending it to the, I'm usually not going through IDEXX or Antech. I'm usually sending it directly to Cornell or Auburn specifically, which we'll ship overnight to. Their general turnaround time is going to be 48 hours on the most part. So if I'm sending my sample out beginning of the week, I'm usually getting my result back by end of week.
Wow, that's come a long
So
way.
yeah, so it is pretty quick. And I
Yeah.
will say, like, in a case like you just said, if I had a really strong suspicion on FIP, I would definitely send this off, but it also wouldn't hold me from starting treatment.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about that. So, can you talk more about the GS-441524, for example, where we can get it and how to dose it?
Yes. Yeah. And I'm only going to call it GS441524 once. And from here on out, I'm just going to say GS because I don't want to say those numbers a million
Yeah.
times. But yeah, GS is essentially a nucleoside analog that functions as a competitive inhibitor of the natural nucleoside triphosphate. So it incorporates itself into the RNA genome, causing premature termination of replication. So it's going to stop replication of the viral genome. Really, it was first looked at in 2018 and has been super heavily studied since. If you Google FIP GS into like Google Scholar, you'll get something like 15 pages now of studies that have come out on this medication. So we have a lot of information on it. And so obviously won't go into all of those studies, but the biggest really takeaway is that it is super effective against FIP in cats, having cure rates ranging from 80% to 94%, some studies showing a relapse rate as high as 15%. Most compounding pharmacies now carry GS, and it is super widely available, pretty easy to get for a wide range of prices and formulation between like pills, liquid, capsules, all of those things. Stokes Pharmacy, whose partner is Bova Pharmacy, has been making it the longest, as Bova Pharmacy has been legally compounding it for other countries since 2021, really at the mid of COVID. And Stokes Pharmacy uses the same formulation that they do. Many of the studies that have since come out looking at the compounded formulations are really using the one from Bova. Therefore, it's kind of looked at as the most trusted formulation. But that, on the flip side, also makes it one of the most expensive ones. One of the last cats that I put on it, I want to say the owner told me that for the full 84 days, it was about $1,800 for the full course. So it does tend to be on the more expensive side. Ultimately, there's a lot of factors as where we prescribe it, who I'm going to prescribe it through, price, formulations, how quickly they can get it to my client. I generally still start by recommending Stokes Pharmacy just since we have the most studies on that formulation. But for owners that have significant financial concerns, I will reach for ones from the start that are cheaper. Specifically, Specialty Veterinary Pharmacy or SVP is one of the most cheapest formulations of GS, and you can get like a whole treatment course for less than $500. Dosing is generally going to be a 15 milligram per kilogram per day minimum for wet and dry forms that don't have any ocular or neurologic involvement, and 20 mgs per kg per day for ocular and neurologic forms. It's really important to monitor weight. We really never want to drop below that 15 mg per kg per day minimum. So especially in a young cat, like if you're diagnosing it in a 6-month-old cat, I always encourage the owner to buy that $20 baby scale from Amazon, weigh the kitten at home weekly. And I usually give them a cutoff value to say, if and when the cat reaches this many pounds, please reach out to me as we'll have to adjust the dosing. So having a good weight check is always really important. Treatment duration has really historically been 12 weeks or 84 days. Really, since it's first been studied, it's always been a really extended duration of treatment. Within the past year, there's been a couple studies that have come out looking at a 6-week or 42-day treatment that actually showed no difference in remission rates in those cats with shorter treatment. So I do still, from the start, recommend a full 12-week course, but would consider a shorter 6-week course if there was really severe financial constraints, if the cat was really horrible to medicate and they just could not get it pilled anymore, and especially if the blood work had already normalized, I would consider then that 6-week course. But for the most part, it's going to be that 12-week, 84-day course. And thankfully, GS is legally able to be kept in as hospital stock in most states. And so, since prompt treatment is important in these FIP cases, I really encourage hospitals that are seeing FIP on a frequent basis trying to keep hospital stock of some GS. We do that at our hospital. We only send them home with like 5 days worth because it's expensive from the start, expensive to after markups on a at a hospital level, but sending them home, getting them started for the first few days, super important. There are some states where keeping hospital stock is not allowed, so that's like Arkansas, Maine, Massachusetts, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Rhode Island, and West Virginia. Those do not allow for hospital stock of GS since it's compounded, but all other states do. I think it's super important. We get referrals just because other hospitals know that we have GS in stock and can get it for patients same day.
Excellent. And what is the expected response been after starting GS?
Oh, good question. And it is super quick. And this is one of the reasons why, I think some of these treatment trials that we consider for FIP with GS works is really because I expect fever and anorexia to really resolve within 2 to 3 days. And if it's the wet form, I expect the fluid to be gone within like the first 2 weeks. The blood work changes can take longer to respond. So, the albumin globulin ratio is what takes longest generally to respond, with that taking up to the full 2 to 3 months to fully resolve. That's why I really only monitor blood work at the 6 week mark, again, before stopping treatment at the 12 week mark. Usually, then again, about 1 month after treatment, I'll start checking it again. But yeah, it's super re quick response rate. So again, it is not uncommon for me to do a GS trial in a cat that, again, I've done some of the diagnostics on, have a decent suspicion of FIP, especially if the cat is pretty sick and I can't wait for other results to come back. I definitely will trial GS. Again, with the owner understanding that we could be missing something. I don't really think I'm going to be masking something. Like, if there was an improvement, I really do think that's because we're treating FIP. Not that it's getting better because I'm treating a different fungal, a different viral infection, which I can't say will never happen. But for the most part, I feel pretty confident that a positive response is treatment of FIP. And again, it's quick. Like, most owners tell me that they notice improvements even after the first dose. So within, honestly, within the first 2 to 3 days, if those patients are not showing much improvement, I start to question my diagnosis.
We had a cat in ICU that was in the incubator on oxygen, really just really bad shape, and FIP, and we started this the GS less than 12 hours. The cat was like, "Just kidding, I'm back," you know.
No.
Mean, it's probably it's all my 22 years, I've never seen something like that aside from Addison's.
Yep.
I was like, holy smokes, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it is so great. And again, I think that's what makes a trial as part of our presumptive diagnosis.
Yes.
I get some of my ER doctors coming to me probably on an every week basis on a cat that they had come into the through the ER, and they're like, could I trial GS? And there are some cases where I say, it's not screaming FIP for me. But there's definitely cases that, yeah, I say as long as the owners are educated, as long as we document our stuff, we have that open, honest communication with the owners, I think an FIP GS trial is really fair in most cases. I know there's always concerns that we're going to build resistance by overusing the medication, and that's always a concern with any antibiotic, antifungal, antiviral. It's always going to be a concern. But I think until we find a better way to diagnose FIP without surgical biopsies, I think we're reaching for and doing the best we can, honestly. And yes, do I wish there was a better situation where I didn't just have to throw medication at them? Yes. But in the reality, would I want my if I thought my cat could have FIP, would I trial this treatment? Hands down, 100%. I would.
Totally. Same, absolutely. What about the other FIP treatments that are now available, like molnupiravir and EIDD-1931? Like, what are your thoughts on those?
Again, we are really lucky to not only have GS available, but now we have relatively easy access to these other treatments, including the molnupiravir, which is also known as EIDD-2801. And then we have EIDD-1931, which is essentially the active form of molnupiravir. And both of these have really similar mechanisms of action to GS as their nucleoside analogs. Molnupiravir was initially studied as a rescue therapy in cats that weren't responding to GS, but has been more recently looked into as a first-line treatment and did show really similar remission rates as GS. We still have, though, have so much more data on GS than we do molnupiravir, and there does seem to be some more side effects to molnupiravir. So I still reach for GS as my first-line therapy. But yeah, I mean, I have between 5 and 10 cats on molnupiravir currently that either didn't respond to FIP in the first place or had a relapse of FIP while on GS. It's thankfully available through Wedgewood, so it's pretty easy to get, and it is really inexpensive. Again, one of my last clients that just got a full course of molnupiravir, I think, told me she paid $300 for the entire course for the full 12 weeks. So, at least that's what is reported to me. So, I can't. Won't put my name on that price, but it does tend to be one of the cheaper forms. It is dosed a little differently than GS. It's dosed at 15 mgs per kg twice daily for the wet, dry, or ocular forms, and up to 20 mgs per kg twice daily for the neurologic forms. Again, there's also this EIDD-1931, which is the active and potentially more potent form of molnupiravir, which is now carried by Stoke/Bova Pharmacy as well. We have even less research on EIDD-1931 than molnupiravir, and definitely much less than we do on GS. So this is one that I truly reserve as for refractory cases. Usually I'll reach for molnupiravir first, but again, I have one cat currently on this EIDD-1931 because it's unfortunately relapsed even on molnupiravir. So it's something else we have in our toolbox, which is really nice. There are some other treatments mostly looked at as add-on treatments, so like in addition to GS or any of the nucleoside analogs, like Paxlovid, GC376, and mefloquine. We won't really go into those because those are a bit more complicated and again are tend to be add-on care. So we're not going to go too much into those today. But the International Cat Care or iCatCare just put out an updated FIP guidelines in July of this year. And we also have the AAFP guidelines and the European Advisory Board on Cat Disease or the ABCDFIP guidelines, which are really all great resources. Again, a lot of the information from these talks are taken from these guidelines, taken from primary literature. They're super helpful. So for especially anyone that's managing one of their first FIP cases or having a case that relapses and we don't know what to do with it, and maybe the owner doesn't want to refer it, these are really all great resources that walk you through what do you start with, what dose, how do you monitor, and then what are these other treatments? What options do we have? These are all really great resources for that.
Yeah, fantastic resources. It's come a long way. That's great. Wow, excellent. Fantastic information, Dr. Kelly Chappell. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and expertise and really learning a lot as we go along with FIP. Hopefully, diagnostic testing will find something soon to help us out.
I'm holding my breath. I'm keeping my fingers and toes crossed.
Yeah.
Now that we can treat it, if only we could diagnose it easier. I bet when that becomes possible, I bet we're going to suspect FIP in cats that we never suspected it in before.
Right. That'll be fantastic. All right. Paws crossed, toe beans crossed. Let's do
Exactly.
it. Thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.
you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.